Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
I will end Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That's my commitment to you.
They are literally voiceless, not yet with tongues, and perhaps even without names yet. They, too, require our most careful attention and radical support.
There are senators that have been involved with the slaughtering of innocent children. Our vice president goes to communion, and yet he has supported the sucking out of brains of babies.
It takes difficult times to drive a Christian to prayer. We are not inclined to pray. Now, prayer is the voice of the living faith in Jesus Christ, but according to our fallen nature, we are not inclined to pray. In fact, we're quite the opposite. We're inclined toward false prayer. We're inclined toward silence to God, giving God the silent treatment, certainly not seeking from God from a position of absolute helplessness the help that only God can give us. So what is proper Christian prayer, and why in the world did the 16th century reformer Martin Luther say that it was Satan who drove him to true Christian prayer? We'll answer that question here in just a minute. We're coming to you live this Monday afternoon. It's Columbus Day. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. For the next 2 hours of the program, your questions and your comments, you can call us 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. You can email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org, or you can Twitter us at @issuesetc. Dr. David Scare joins us here for the first half hour to talk about prayer. Then Dr. Carl Beckwith, part four of a five-part series with him on early Christianity. Today we'll talk about Christology in the second century, the subject of Christ, who he is, what he does. It's a big subject in the early days of Christianity, should remain so among us today. Dr. Carl Beckwith will join us. A little later in the second hour of the program, we'll review a St. Michael and All Angels sermon preached recently by Pastor Matt Harrison of LCMS World Relief and Human Care. A little sermon review coming up later in the program. 1-877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org or Twitter us at issuesetc. Dr. David Scare is professor and chairman of the Department of Systematic Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's author of an article in the Concordia Theological Quarterly titled Luther on Prayer. Dr. Scare, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much, Pastor Wilkin. It's good to be here.
Why did Luther credit Satan with driving him to prayer?
Well, the concept of prayer in Luther should be understood in regard to how he understood himself and his own theology, because basic to his doctrine of justification was his own unworthiness. And it was his unworthiness that was at least the negative cause that saw him to understand that a person is acceptable to God on account of faith. But Luther could never rid himself of the sense of unworthiness. And this sense of unworthiness was intensified by his awareness. He had a great awareness that Satan was a factor in his life. Now, that's not very common to some of us, but he had a very real sense of Satan. We all confess and believe in Satan. And so he saw prayer as the only weapon or the only means whereby he could address this. He saw Satan as out to destroy him, because Satan constantly reminded him of his sins And the reason for that was Satan wants to lead the sinner into despair. So the way out of this was prayer. It fits very well with this concept of the German word Anfechtungen, which means basically to be pressed in on all sides by a sense of helplessness, seeing that there really is that there is no God or no help. And so he found he went to God in prayer.
So it sounds like this. You use the term Anfechtungen. Some would translate it soul struggle. Luther says that this goes hand in hand with proper Christian prayer, that is really only in the context of this soul struggle that the Christian learns to rightly pray as God would have him pray. What's that all about?
Well, the true posture of prayer, now there's all kinds of prayers. There's liturgical prayer, there's formal prayer, prayers out of books. The prayer that really is motivated, that really is the highest form of prayer, is one that comes from a sense of desperation, of coming to the realization that one cannot in any way see anything good in himself, so he has to rely on God, rely on Christ. And I think it's this item in Luther's theology that makes him a very attractive human being, because he's not attached, he's not detached from internal struggles that go on. Now, the person who is not a Christian pretends that there are no struggles, and of course he's playing a game with himself. But the true prayer comes from struggles, and it doesn't have to be articulated. You know, the prayers that we have in the New Testament from the blind Bartimaeus is simply, Jesus, son of David, have mercy upon me. And, I mean, that prayer comes up quite frequently, because the person who cries for mercy to Christ, he's throwing himself completely on Christ. He's not bargaining with God. He is not coming with prior stipulations. He's not telling God what God is to do, or how God is to relate it to him. The person who cries out for mercy doesn't come there with an agenda that he will do something for God and God will do something for him. That's completely that's completely ruled out in Luther. I suppose, well, you know, you can use any number of you can use the illustration of Peter sinking in the water. But it's when we are completely down on our luck. I hate to use the word luck because it has kind of a pagan meaning. But when we are completely down and we have to rely, then we have to rely on Christ.
Does this give us at least a glimpse into, if not a full explanation, of why God so often permits his children to suffer?
Well, you know, that's the theodicy question.
Yeah.
And the question is, if there is a God, why does he permit all of these terrible things to happen? In fact, there are, you know, there are noted cases where people have given up Christianity and religion because of some catastrophic event. I know that Michael Golder, who's an English New Testament scholar, he gave up the doctrine of God when the Manchester football team, we would say soccer, I met him, and he told me this. I mean, he still maintained he was a scholar. And the reason that God causes these things to happen in our lives is so that we do not rely upon ourselves. And, this goes together with a false understanding that if I'm going to believe in God and I have some horrendous things happening in my life, therefore I conclude that God is punishing me for what sin I have done. I have just reviewed a book of devotions by John Calvin, and Calvin says if there's any evil things happening in our lives, I mean, if we're experiencing evil, sickness, or tragedy, or whatever it is, we should search our past and ourselves to see if we have committed any sins. But in Luther's, that doesn't exist in Luther's thought at all. These things are going to happen. And, well, even consider, for example, David, the great hymn writer, the great psalmist of the Old Testament. His psalms come out of evil situations which even he himself was responsible for bringing about. And it is in desperation that the true faith comes into existence. And we're going to be publishing an article in the Concordia Theological Quarterly from a Lithuanian pastor telling us of the persecution of the Lutheran Church in that country during the Soviet communist days. And he said in those days, the people kept to their faith. And so the modern idea of prayer is that in some way this is going to improve our financial or marital situation or social situation and so forth is, first of all, it's not in the New Testament, and it certainly doesn't reflect Luther's idea of prayer.
Dr. David Scare is our guest. When we come back, we have 10 more minutes with him on prayer. He is professor and chairman of the Department of Systematic Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's author of an article in the Concordia Theological Quarterly titled Luther on Prayer. You can read this article under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Back live on this Monday afternoon, the 12th of October. What kind of questions or comments do you have about prayer? 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943. Email your questions and comments to us here in the studio in real time. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Or if you're following us at Twitter, at issuesetc. 1-877-623-MYIE. Talkback at issuesetc.org. More with Dr. David Scare on prayer after this. We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you the new Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, 1600 Gulfview Drive, Suite 230, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the new Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
When you hear the words new music for your congregation, do you automatically think of mindless praise music? Well, think again. Liturgy Solutions has new compositions for all seasons of the church year that are firmly grounded in the Reformation truths of Christ for us in word and sacrament. Check us out on the web at www.liturgysolutions.com. At Liturgy Solutions, we don't do worship, we're deep into liturgy. www.liturgysolutions.com.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues Etc.
You're invited this summer to an exploration and study tour of the lives of Martin Luther and J.S. Bach. This tour of Germany will be led by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Matt Phillips of Concordia University, Nebraska. See where Luther and Bach were born, lived, worked, and died. For more information on a tour of Germany, June 1st through the 10th, call area code 402-643-7444 or send an email to matthew.phillips@cune.edu.
Here's a new way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Check out our page on Facebook. Network with fellow Issues Etc. junkies. Sign up to become a fan, and we'll send you updates on future topics and guests. You'll even find photos of in-studio guests, Todd drinking chelada, and highlights from our one-year anniversary open house. You'll discover that Todd, Jeff, and Craig really do have faces for radio on Facebook. Issues Etc. on Facebook. Another way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Facebook.com/IssuesETC.
Sometimes I thank God for unanswered prayers. Remember when you're talking to the man upstairs.
We're talking about prayer. Dr. David Scare is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. You know how much we love our on-demand listeners. I want to give our on-demand listeners and all the visitors to our website a heads up. This coming weekend, the Issues Etc. website will be down for some maintenance, but right back up again on Monday for you to find everything you always find there, on-demand listening and all the other things we offer there at our website, www.issuesetc.org. It'll be down this weekend for a little bit and then back up Monday. Just want to give our on-demand listeners and all our visitors to our website a little heads up. Dr. Scheer, how did Luther counsel the Christian to regard apparently unanswered prayers?
Well, the question is, all prayers are answered, but it's God who determines how they're going to be answered. And there's a lot of misinformation in that kind of situation, because I was just reading this, I think, by a Lutheran pastor. At my age, my memory is not as good as it once was. That, after all, God did not answer the prayer of Jesus. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Now, Jesus is in a sense of being forsaken, and God doesn't answer prayer. The problem with that kind of request, or that kind of observation, rather, is that God did answer the prayer of Jesus by raising him from the dead. And that's taken from Psalm 22. And that's a debate of what Jesus did on the cross during the period of crucifixion. Did he just pray that one particular verse, "My God, why hast thou forsaken me?" It completely overlooks the fact that in that prayer, God comes to the deliverance. He comes to the deliverance of the person who is offering the prayer. And so God answers all prayer. Now, when it comes to the prayers of the pagans, God is not under obligation there. He knows what they're saying. He knows what they're thinking and how he responds to them. That's something that belongs to his mysteries. But God is working in a way. Prayer indicates that, first of all, we realize that God is in control. It also indicates that we are relying on him. And the whole Christian life is prayer. As soon as a person enters into a church on Sunday morning or whenever during the weekday, he is engaged in a constant act of prayer. And by being in that situation, he is learning to pray. So the person who is absent from the corporate worship of the church is depriving himself of ways to express himself over against God. I mean, Jesus did say, when you pray, you are to say, "Our Father." Now, the Reformed think that's just a suggestion. No, that is exactly what you are to pray. And one of the great deficiencies in the new Missouri Synod hymnal, the Lutheran Service Book, I believe it's called, is they haven't included the collects. A collect is that short prayer, really at the beginning of the service. You have the salutation and the invitation to pray, and that prayer could hardly take 20 seconds to pray. And I think it's a defect, because when people come to church, they should have an opportunity to look at these prayers. And the prayers have to do with deliverance rather than with asking with things. Now, if there's been a corruption of prayer, at least in the Protestant American situation, is that prayer is seen chiefly and almost only as a way of financial improvement. And it's kind of strange that should be done, because Jesus tells us that we should avoid Satan really comes disguised in material things. And there seems to be a general impression that we should pray for cars and wealth and whatever it is. And so prayer is greatly misunderstood. And also, prayer is not optional. It's not something, I can be a good Christian because I have faith. Well, that's not really true. Because faith is expressing itself. Faith expresses itself in prayer. And hence, where there is no prayer, where the prayer is not, you know, we cannot go into the hearts of people. But where there is no prayer, then there is no life with God. The person is not in relationship with God. I don't think we pay enough attention to prayer. Also, an unnecessary difference is made between proclamation and prayer. One of the greatest proclamations happens to be the Lord's Prayer. The prayer is itself a statement of the gospel. The person who prays that understands who God is and who Christ is. And prayers can be very brief. They can be very long. They can just be in the midst of an accident or great trouble. Very short, relying on God, asking Him to have mercy on this situation. When we see horrible things, we should immediately commit ourselves and the situation to God right away. And it doesn't matter how we express ourselves. It's not that one prayer is better than another. It's not the prayer that a person who is a clergy person is better than the prayer of a lay person. That's not true at all.
A quick phone call from Kathy in St. Charles, Missouri. Hi, Kathy.
Yeah, hi. I had been given the book called The Promise, and it was kind of tying in the concept of prayer with all things working together for good of the believer. But the problem I had with the book is that the way it defined good was the way the believer defines good. And I think as a Christian and as I've grown in my Christian faith, good is not always something that God defines good maybe differently than what I define good as.
Hey, Kathy, before we let you go, who wrote the book that you're talking about?
It's Robert J. Morgan.
All right. Thank you very much, Kathy. You write about this in your article, Luther on Prayer, about Luther would equate trying to define for God what is good with unbelief. Wouldn't he, Dr. Scare?
Well, I think Kathy is very perceptive. In what God sees as good, we may not see as good. And also, within this world, there is Kathy's question speaks about it's. She speaks in an abstraction when she speaks about good. What's good for one person may not be good for the other. And. Well, it's kind of ironic, if it's not amusing, when Christian nations were fighting against one another, they were each praying for their own good. So, in a certain sense, they were against one another. But the true good is the conversion of the sinner. That's the true good. The true good is that those who do not believe may come to belief. That is the highest. That's the highest good, and that's the good we should work for.
Finally, then, Dr. Scare, with about a minute, what can we learn from the reformer Martin Luther regarding prayer?
You can learn from Luther this, that the lack of confidence in oneself is the instigation for putting true confidence in God. Too many Christians have a sense of unworthiness. They interpret their worthiness as not being acceptable to God. But it is out of the sense of complete unworthiness that the truest prayers come out. The prayer of Jesus, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And then, you know, that prayer, one thing I learned from Luther, and that is a prayer can have three subjects who are praying the prayer. It can be Christ, it can be the psalmist, that is David himself, and it can be us. So in the desperation of prayer, our psyches, our inner selves, approach exactly what Christ is. Christ was like himself. It's very hard. We have an idea that Christ was completely confident at all times. Well, not really. He knew this. He knew desertion by his friends. He knew his desertion by God. He knew being alone. He knew that. The many people today, or many people any place, I should say, have had the horrible feeling of being alone and that God had deserted them.
About 20 seconds.
And this should, I'm not saying that we should be happy and rejoice and say, boy, it really isn't it great that I'm alone. But in these situations, God is molding the individual. The more he is left alone, the more he depends upon God in Christ. And so that it is by that being separated from Christ, he is actually joined to Christ.
Dr. David Scare is professor of and chairman of the Department of Systematic Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's author of an article in the Concordia Theological Quarterly titled Luther on Prayer. Dr. Scare, thanks for being our guest.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah, we have about 15 seconds.
I handle this topic in the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics. There's a whole section in Law and Gospel and the Means of Grace. There is a theological discussion, not dealing with Luther, that may benefit some people.
We will post a link to that, by the way, at our website tonight, issuesetc.org. Thank you, Dr. Scare.
It was good talking to you.
And to you as well. When we come back, second half hour of the program brings us Dr. Carl Beckwith of Beeson Divinity School. We'll do part four of a five-part series with him on early Christianity. Today we'll talk about the big subject in second century Christianity, Christology, who Jesus is. We'll be right back.
This is not like your normal study Bible.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Will Wheaton on the New Lutheran Study Bible.
The wisdom of the church in meditating on the Word of God across the ages is supplied throughout the notes. Any wise, good thing that's been said on the basis of some text of the Bible, they've stuck it in there. It's got prayers. The Bible is replete with these little devotional meditations. It gives you help in witnessing. How can you use this particular doctrine from God's Word at this point to bring others to Christ, to help them come to know what He's done for them? The Bible is absolutely amazing. It's got great pictures. It's got, well, you can tell I'm excited about it. And I was one who was said to be jaundiced and not appreciative of it.
Enrich your devotional life through word and prayer with the New Lutheran Study Bible. Check it out at our website, issuesetc.org, or you can buy the Lutheran Study Bible by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, the Lutheran Study Bible.
Now, only our listeners can cancel us. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
You're part of a growing number of people if you think abortion should not be legal. A recent poll by the Pew Research Center shows continuing erosion in support for legal abortion. While more people think unborn babies should be protected, the largest groups of people becoming more pro-life are non-Hispanic Catholics who regularly attend church and Democrat men. The poll shows fewer pro-abortion liberals think abortion is an important issue. This should give encouragement to pro-life candidates across the nation. And I hope it gives encouragement to you, too. Please help me get the word out about the reality of abortion. Visit our website at lifeissues.org where you'll find what you need to share the truth with others. Help make these poll numbers even stronger.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.